ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Alan Kohler, and I want to take you straight to the source. Every Friday, I sit down with the people running companies, shaping industries, and influencing the Australian economy to talk risk, power, profit, pressure, not just their success, but their strategy, and what it means for the rest of us. Because that's business. Search, subscribe, and stay ahead. Find That's Business with Alan Kohler on the ABC Business Daily feed, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcast.
The oil shock from the war in the Middle East is proving to be the greatest that we've ever seen, and it's unclear just how long it will go and just how extensive the ramifications on the global economy are going to be. Households are pretty pessimistic right now, investors are very nervous, and the federal government in Australia is trying to figure out what to do here. I'm Melissa Clark, filling in for David Spears here on the lands of the Ngunnawal people and acknowledging other custodians. This is Insiders on Background. To get a better understanding of the scale of the crisis and the impact that it's having on the Australian economy, who better to talk to than economist Chris Richardson from Rich Insight? Chris, thanks very much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks, Mel.
So, look, just to start with, I really want to get a sense of the scale of the impact we're seeing here. Like, is there a comparable circumstance we can point to give us a sense of just how big a crisis this is in economic terms?
If you're looking solely at what is happening in energy markets, this is really big. This is some of the past energy crises we've seen in decades ago added together. You knock out one in five barrels of oil, but you also knock out one in five of the world's LNG production, and it's really, really hard to replace that fast. This is, of course, a global problem, but being felt most in Asia. The only good news is that the world depends less on fossil fuels than it used to. So, bigger shock, but the global economy a little more resilient to this type of shock than it used to be.
There's a lot of uncertainty, though. It's really unclear how this is going to play out, how de-escalation might happen. That certainly makes it harder to respond in a policy sense, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, because a whole bunch of things could happen, ranging from the nothing much else from here, and it does settle down, to certainly stuff that's bigger and badder. Even if nothing else happens, though, there's been a lot of damage to energy infrastructure that will take some time to fix. So the pain might have arrived fast, but chances are it disappears slow.
Particularly when, obviously, a lot of the impact is on, as you say, energy infrastructure, but that flows through to so many other parts of the economy. I mean, some of the more immediate effects we're seeing are in areas, not just fuel, but fertilisers, plastics, bitumen, even steel is another area where we're starting to see that flow-on effect into other parts of the economy. So just how far could a fuel or an energy crisis reach into our lives?
It could a lot. And even if you're not dealing with rationing in a major sense or running out, as it were, of stuff here in Australia, if you just focus on families, so far the price at the pump's gone up by more than a third. That of itself takes about 1% away from the living standards of families. And as you say, it spreads through all sorts of other things, including the impact of fertilizer and fuel on food, the impact on transport in general. The impact here in Australia on electricity prices could be quite tricky, because they are often set by what's happening to gas prices, and they've obviously gone up a lot. Or in other words, the initial 1% loss in our living standards could become 2% relatively fast, even if not much else happens from here.
It's certainly a pretty pessimistic picture. I think a lot of Australians have been pretty focused on the inflation figures because they see a relationship between that and interest rates, and also what they see happening at the grocery checkout or at the Bowser. We heard from Treasurer Jim Chalmers earlier that there was modelling that suggested inflation could go up to mid to high 4%. He's since then said he's getting more modelling done. It could be closer to 5%. What do you think? How high could it go?
Well, if you could measure inflation in Australia today, it would probably be at least 5% and maybe 5.5%. And that's the problem, right? This is a fast and sudden hit. We are doing a bit of a rerun of what happened back in 2022. In 2022, we already had inflation, and then there was a war that affected energy markets. You are getting the same now, and the government and the Reserve Bank are looking back at what they did last time and asking themselves, well, can we improve on that?
Consumer confidence seems to have taken a bit of a hit. I know some of the tracking of that recently has shown that consumer sentiment is really down. How does that play into inflation and what people are anticipating with inflation? Talk me through that relationship.
And typically the ups and downs of how families are feeling doesn't have a big impact on the economy. It usually just reflects the headlines. The difference is when there's a really sharp move. And on the longest standing measure we've got in Australia, put out by ANZ and Roy Morgan, the latest update there said Australian families are more pessimistic than they've been at any time in more than half a century. Now, to be clear, I'm not sure they should be that pessimistic. I'm not sure that financial markets should be pricing in all those extra interest rate increases here and around the world. But the shock value right now is very high, and it is part of the reason why in a different set of circumstances Australia and the world might have been able to handle this shock better. When you get a big energy price shock, sure, it initially adds to inflation, but it hurts the economy a lot. It hurts families. It hurts businesses. That then slows down the economy, and that contains within it the expectation that at some stage down the track, inflation will actually be lower than it was otherwise going to be. The petrol price increase in Australia is already, if you like, the equivalent of three interest rate rises. So I worry that the economy will slow, but I also worry that the Reserve Bank may not be as willing to look through this as it might have been had it happened, say, 15 years ago.
Why is that?
Because the ultimate promise of the Reserve Bank to Australians is that they will get inflation to 2.5%. And they haven't met that promise for 4 years now. They weren't expecting before the war to be back there for at least another year. And what's happening with the war complicates that further. And the thing about central banks like our Reserve Bank, that the currency of the future is not Bitcoin. It is trust. It's always, you know, that's the true currency, trust. And central banks rely a lot on families and businesses trusting that they will hit their promise, the 2.5%. And there are just some signs in surveys that Australians are starting to wonder whether the Reserve Bank is being as tough on inflation as it should be.
So can that become a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy then? If people aren't convinced the Reserve Bank can actually get on top of inflation, their expectation is that inflation is going to be higher, they then make more cautious decisions, which impacts economic growth. Is that the sort of circular outcome?
That is exactly right. Now, if you think inflation is going to be higher than the Reserve Bank is promising over time, then if you're a business, you might say, well, my suppliers are going to put up their prices, my workers are going to demand higher wages, so I'll just put up my prices now to stay ahead of that. Again, you know, workers will be looking at their wages and saying, well, we want more and the rest of it. So, yes, you start to lose that game. And that's a problem for Australia because we still had lingering inflation here and a bit more of a problem here than in most other nations. This new shock has arrived atop a problem. And if it were different circumstances, if inflation were low, if it had been boring for a long time, then maybe the Reserve Bank would have just stared this down. But it's, you know, its most recent rate rise was probably in response to the earlier inflation problems it was grappling with. Where it heads now, I am not as pessimistic. You know, markets and a bunch of economists still think there are a few more interest rate rises out there. I think there might be one, and I don't expect it to come before the budget.
I think there'll be plenty of people who hope that you are right there. I'm glad you mentioned the budget, though, because it's obviously pretty crucial timing, and there's a big moment here for the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, to figure out what is the best way forward at this time. He and the government are under a lot of pressure to help people with cost of living as they have previously during times of high inflation. But he also has intentions and desires to deliver a big package of reform, and that costs money. There's concern about if you give cost of living relief, does that add to inflation? Take me through what the options are that Jim Chalmers has at this moment to try to both help households and businesses, but also deliver what the economy needs to get inflation under control.
I think there will be a fascinating tug of war in Canberra over the next month when the decisions going into the budget are mostly bedded down. Because there is a gap between what good policy would do and what good politics would do. And there's often that gap, but it's looking larger at the moment. Yes, what is happening is taking money away from families, but it's giving it to some businesses, you know, exporters of gas, for example, and to some extent coal as well, and it's giving it to the government. And that's a bit of a rerun, again, of what we saw in 2022, 2023. You know, the government started running surpluses and families are looking at that and saying, you know, I'm in under real pressure here. Help me out. And so the politics are very much about, please, where's my Band-Aid? But it is tricky, as you note, you know, when you already have an inflation problem and the government hands out Band-Aids. Inflation is ultimately a problem that, you know, there's too much money chasing too little stuff. And if the government hands out extra money, it can make the task of the Reserve Bank harder in fighting inflation. And that's what we had, right? You know, we did hand out Band-Aids here in Australia last time. Other things equal, it probably kept inflation going a little longer and stronger than otherwise. And the government will be cautious and should be cautious around that.
What if the Band-Aids or the assistance comes from employers? We were talking, you mentioned before, wages. There's certainly a discussion at the moment about what level of increase there should be to the minimum wage, for example, with the ACTU pushing for a 5% increase in wages. The government says wages should at least be higher than inflation so people aren't facing a real cut to their wages. Would that be a way of having more money in the pockets of families, but coming from the business side rather than coming from the taxpayer? Does that make the Treasurer's job easier, or is it the same problem because either way there's more money in people's pockets and that's a risk to inflation?
Yes, it is the same problem, but you are getting to the fundamental question, the oldest question in economics, of who pays. So, you know, it is true that some businesses are better off and some, and the government itself will be better off. But families will be worse off. And how all that gets divided up across Australia, you know, yes, the Reserve Bank is going to be part of the who pays question, but the main answer will come on that budget, 12th of May. And there is a temptation to take as much pain away from families, but you have to be pretty careful that you don't, you know, move and maybe even worsen the problem. So, to take that minimum wage case up before the Fair Wage Commission as an example, ACTU says 5%. Government has said, well, they'd like to see something that's greater than inflation. Or in other words, they're not using the budget, but they'd be using employers to say, well, you know, let's share some of this pain around. And that's kind of understandable. Worth noting, though, we think, because it's a minimum wage case, that these are the worst off people in Australia. The worst off group are people who don't have jobs. You know, so the unemployed, the pensioners, students, and even when you're looking at those on minimum wage, and this wage increase eventually flows through and reaches about one in every four workers in Australia, they're relatively scattered through the family income distribution. So it's a big group, and it does deserve support. But the first big bit of the puzzle, right, around who pays and how the government will handle this juggle. So the government is shifting some of the pain onto employers. Employers, of course, will to some extent raise prices themselves. We are making inflation just a little bit worse than it would otherwise be, and that says future Australians, you know, those in a year or so, will be feeling some of that pain.
So Jim Chalmers says that this period and the disruption that's being experienced in the economy gives him more reason to undertake productivity reform, and he's talked about a range of areas there, including taxation. He says it's a reason to go further, not slower. Is he right? Is a crisis a good time to do big reform from government?
Never waste a good crisis, Mel.
It's a good saying.
It is a good saying. And look, the Treasurer is absolutely right. To be clear, there are some immediate issues and they need to be juggled and they could get rather more complex than they are today. But there's also longer term stuff, right? You know, 20 years and more, our politicians either side of the aisle haven't particularly challenged us. You know, they might have shepherded us through a crisis like a COVID or a global financial crisis or whatever, but they haven't really given us the tough love, whether it comes to our taxes or our spending. Lots of silly spending, lots of terrible taxes. There are many barnacles on the budget. I would love to see them being addressed. But the political problem with that is the obvious one. You know, so you already have a bunch of people feeling the pain in petrol. They'll soon feel it in food, in electricity, in household gas costs. This is going to hurt. And the thing about a reform budget is that, you know, some people will win, some people will lose, and the losers are always much grumpier than the winners. And if you reform budget over and above that, does some budget repair, means smaller deficits into the future, well, that's more losers. Or in other words, I entirely agree with the Treasurer. We need to go harder, not less hard. But that would be annoying more people at a time when a whole bunch of them have just been annoyed by the impact of this war.
I guess that shows that the political case here is going to be just as important as the economic one. If it comes down to convincing people that the pain and the hurt is something that's necessary.
Yeah, and I do think we need that challenge. The flip side of it is that there's a chance that some of the political hardheads in the government in Canberra are going to say, well, you know, there's an opposition in disarray. Let's just hand out more Band-Aids, you know, hope the problem goes away soon. And basically keep the focus off us, the government, keep it on the opposition. You could see more troubles for the opposition that way. Or in other words, that's why I think that the next months, as those decisions are made, do they reform? Do they give us the tough love that's arguably well overdue? You know, neither sides have been great at it for a long time now. Or do they show us a bit too much love again and just hand out the big bucks?
I feel like the next 2 months are going to be pretty consequential in historical terms. What do you think?
From that reform viewpoint, I kind of hope so. You know, when Keating became Treasurer in Australia in 1983, you know, his description was that essentially we had coasted for too long, and everybody, you know, both sides in Parliament, the public service, the public itself, you know, people kept saying, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. And we're not as bad as we were in the early 80s, for sure, but we have had a long period of drift where our politicians haven't challenged us. And there's lots of stuff that is long overdue that needs doing.
We'll find out very soon. Chris Richardson, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Many thanks, Mel.
A big thanks to Chris Richardson from Rich Insight. And please get in touch with us if you've got any feedback, what you liked about the show, or if there are other issues or topics you want us to do a background dive on. You can email us at insiders@abc.net.au. David Spears will be on your TV at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning for Insiders. He'll be interviewing the Shadow Industry Minister, Andrew Hastie. And of course, Patricia Karvelas will be back in your feed with Politics Now on Monday morning. Thanks very much.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.